This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome back to the Storytime podcast. My name is Claire. I go by Clizaire on the internet. And this is the podcast where people come on and they tell me their stories. And this week I have with me Serena. Hello! Long time no see!
It's been a while, man. Long, long time.
So Serena, for those of you that don't know, which I presume you all already know, is from the Tri Channel. That's how we know each other.
Yes.
And what are you up to these days?
Well, I'm in America. I moved over about 2.5 years ago, working for Big Pharma. I had to sell my soul to get a decent paycheck. But I've been here 2.5 years. And since then, I kind of launched my own sort of branding outside of Tribe. Like, I was always obsessed with fiber and was always going on about fiber because that's kind of the area of expertise that I have within the same realm of my job, which is to do with like fatty liver disease, diabetes and obesity. And since then I've launched like a Patreon where I put up like fiber recipes because I really think it's important for people to look after their health outside of just aesthetics. It's really important for people to nourish their bodies from the inside so that they feel better on the outside. And all that kind of stuff is on like my Instagram, which is at Serena Kajani, my Twitter at Serena Kajani as well. And then my Patreon is patreon.com/ Serena Kajani.
Okay, so do you want to spell one of your usernames there for the audio listeners? And then I will make sure to put all the links down in the description. I'll also put some of it on screen as well.
SERINAKAJANI, Serena Kajani.
Yeah, and check out Serena on all those platforms. So come here, Serena, you have a story for me today.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about how like weird it is, but also like, I don't know, unusual for me growing up in Ireland as a daughter of immigrant parents, but like not really realizing that I was an immigrant or like of immigrant descent. And then kind of coming to terms with that through my adolescence. And now getting to a space where I'm like, I'm actually okay with how my parents treated me as a child. So like my parents, it starts off with my dad moving over in the 1970s and he's from Pakistan. And then my mom, they got married in 1990 and she moved over from India. So in itself, like a Pakistani-Indian mix is very unusual. And they wasted no time. They had me in 91 and then 4 other kids followed. So me and my brother are like Irish twins. There's 15 months between the two of us.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They wasted no time at all. And so like growing up for the two of us, we went to like Catholic schools. We were the only brown family in our area. And I didn't even know I was brown until like I was in second class when the girls were making their Holy Communion. And the priest would come and it was the day that they had to practice taking the bread for their actual day. And so the priest would go around and he'd be like, Jesus has died for your sins so you can have his body in the shape of this bread so you can be forgiven and go to heaven. And so he'd go to each child, one for you, not for you, because I was Muslim. And he was like, I wasn't supposed to get the bread. And then I was like, oh, so I'm different, but I don't understand why I'm different.
Oh, that's awful.
It's fine. It's one of those things that you're just kind of like, why did that happen? I'm kind of confused as to why it happened.
Nobody explained it to you.
Yeah. And even still, my mom was like very okay with me learning about other cultures and religions. So I actually went to the Holy Communion in a white dress. And I was like, I'm one of the girls.
So I didn't have, it's not a similar experience really, but it was like my parents kind of split up right before the Holy Communion, the school I was in. So I ended up going to a different school. And whatever way it worked out, I ended up missing it. So I like landed in the second school. Oh, that was it. The second school did it a year earlier. So I landed in the second school like a year too late and ended up having to like go back into first class and do it with loads of people I didn't know. And like, so that was a really weird experience because all my friends were kind of doing it without me. Like, it's not the same, obviously, but I sort of have an idea, I guess, of like, you do feel really left out, even though you don't really understand what communion is. You know, you want to be involved in it with your friends. Because they're getting to dress up and you're like, it was very confusing.
But I think it's
it was definitely not that I was into the idea of communion at all. I didn't know what was going on.
But I think it's so fascinating how even at like that young age, you still understand what like a tribe means or having your community.
Yes.
And you're like, I want to be with my people, even though I don't understand why they're my people, but they are. And like that is so like ingrained in us from such a young age. And I think that going on from that, I was just like, okay, there is something different about me, but I don't sound any different from my peers. I have slightly darker skin, but like that kind of is the only thing that I can get that like it takes away from me being like them. And then as I got older, and like the girls started going to like discos and like hanging out with boys, was when I really noticed a change in how my parents treated me and how other parents treated their children. Okay. And so my parents were very like strict. I was not allowed to go to the discos. I was not allowed to hang out with boys. And there was a lot of like, I suppose, contention between me and my mom, because my mom, she was only a young mom at the time. Like she had me when she was 17. And she had been uplifted from a small village in India. She was growing up, essentially, had no friends here or in Ireland, had to learn the language, had to learn how to raise children without her family, without her tribe. And so as an adult, I can look back on it in retrospect and be like, Jesus, it was so difficult for my mom. But when I was like 13, 14, 15, 16, I just didn't like her. I was like, you're so mean to me. You're so cruel. You won't let me do these things. Like, it bordered on like abuse, like she used to hit me, but it was always coming from my dad telling her, your kids need to stay in line. And if we weren't, she would get in trouble with him. And then that would like fall back on us. But I didn't see that. I always thought my dad was the best person in the whole world.
Yeah, it's hard to see that. Were you the only daughter?
I have two brothers and two sisters.
And so did the other sisters get similar treatment in terms of not being allowed to do stuff?
No, interestingly enough, I think me and my brother really paved the way for our younger siblings. So me and Amir were super close in age. He's 29 now. But Saifa, who was 6 years younger than myself and then 5 years younger than Amir, mom was a different person when she was raising Saifa. And then even still, like with Salim and Sarah, there's another age gap of 6 years between Saifa and the two younger ones. So mom now is completely chilled out. She's like, they're fine. I did a good job with the first three. I'm good with these the last three.
Yeah, typical older or younger children kind of
get everything. I'm like, this is not fair. You guys have no idea how hard we had it. but like following up, so like I left when I was 20, like, and for all like, and this isn't like a flex or anything, it's just to kind of show how like the dichotomy of being raised in a really well-to-do family. My parents are like, I'm really proud of them for being like that rags to riches. We were put through private school. My first car was like a BMW 1 Series. Like I had everything available to me in terms of finances. But because of my treatment and stuff, and because I just did not get on with my parents, I was like, I need to get out. And so I left home when I was 20 and did it on my own, like got myself through college. And I knew going through school and like going through my degrees and stuff that I have this like underlying resentment towards my parents, but more so to my mom, that I knew would follow me through if I ever had kids. And so I've always noticed that I want to like sort this part of me out because I don't want to be angry at my mom all the time. And so when I moved to America, it was the only instance where I actually had the ability to go to therapy and to look at my parents from like an adult lens. And you go through this like phase of like being really angry at them, like just being so pissed off. And you're like, you should have been this parent to me. Like, why weren't you like the other parents? And what my therapist kind of has taught me over the last couple of months is that my parents are fallible human beings. And I have an idealized view of what they should have done. And it's almost romanticized in my head. And that my parents never, ever wanted me to fail. They never wanted to be mean to me or cruel to me. They did the best they can. And what I'm really realizing as of late is that my parents' job as immigrant parents, and I think it's a generational thing, that when they're raising their kids, their job is to put food on the table and make sure they're good people, like good members of society. Whereas now, when you have kids, it's like, oh, I need to make sure my kid grows up with self-esteem and they're nurtured properly. And it's like, I'm trying to give them the lens of what a parent should do now, but not looking at the context of what a parent should have been doing then. And they, by all means, did exactly what they were supposed to do. And so this weekend, I actually texted my mom and I was like, I completely forgive you for everything that happened when I was a kid, because I know that that wasn't your fault. And whatever you did the best within the realm of what you could do. And I just think it's just, it's a nice like 180 on where I was and like how upset. And I always thought that I could never get over it. But like, I'm in a space now where I'm like, I'm over it. And it's really like liberating.
And how did she take that?
Oh, great. She was really, really good about it. She was just like, you know, everything I did was for you guys and it's paid off because like I'm pretty successful. My brother is really successful. My sister's launched her own cookie company. Like she did what she was supposed to do. And I think she understands because I do know she harbors a lot of guilt. And she's only mentioned it to me one or two times, but you can't say to your mom, yeah, you're right. Like you should feel guilty because that's just mean and cruel. So I don't want to ever do that to her. And so I think having your kids say that to you, be like, look, I get it. You're like, it was a shit time for you. It was a shit time for me, but like we can move past it and our relationship can grow as a result of that. Right.
Isn't that amazing though, that you've reached that stage, like while you still have your mother, loads of people reach that after they lose their parents, you know, and they never kind of get that chance to do that. So on the bright side, isn't that amazing that you and your mum have come to that sort of place now where you can actually take advantage of it and maybe you can rebuild a new relationship?
No, completely. And I think it's funny because people always think that like, oh, if this is what your relationship was like, that's it forever. But like, we're constantly evolving and we're constantly transforming our lives that like, why would you want to be the same person you were 5 years ago or 10 years ago? It doesn't make sense to do that. Like, and like, but like at the same time, I think to be fair to my mom, she's come a long way in terms of her growth and her development that I don't think I could have had this conversation with her 5 years ago. Whereas we've both, because she was growing up at the same time as I was growing up, we're kind of almost in the same space, if that makes sense. But yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, I am so lucky and grateful that I do have this opportunity to do it with my mom while she's here. And that like, it's not me wasting time potentially and then regretting it later.
And how's your relationship with your dad?
Oh, fine. Well, like he's your typical, like, I was always a daddy's girl. But I've always been a bit of a rebellious kid, obviously, because I left home when I was 20. And so there are moments where my dad is just like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what are you going to do about it, Dad?
I feel like the Allen parents probably do that.
And like, I'm just like, you kind of have to accept it. Like, as long as I'm putting food on my table, I'm safe within reason. Like, I almost feel like it's justification because I'm like, you raised me this way.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to eat your cake.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we have a pretty good relationship, but he's a lot older than my mom. And so we're kind of worried that he's like coming along now. And the whole family's like, I don't know if dad has long left. I'm like, I'm still Jesus. America.
Oh God, that's dark.
Yeah. Let's not get down the path. Like, the
family members love to say really dark things, don't they? Like, they often say like, oh, I'll see you again if I'm still alive. And it's like, stop that.
Yeah, why are you putting that out into the universe? Like, you will be here.
Yeah, my older family members say that to me all the time. It's like, stop saying stuff like that. And then, so your kind of relationship that you had with your parents when you were growing up, do you think it was specifically because they were immigrant parents, because you mentioned that, or do you think it was just like the style of parenting at the time?
I'm not sure. I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. Like, I thought I was so different growing up because of my like immigrant status or whatever, and just being different because my parents were Muslim and they were a lot more traditional. But like, I think other girls in my class had not necessarily similar kind of things, but like there was no this like self-esteem. Like there was a lot of like girl, like the school that I went to, you were always told to like get good grades and be seen, not heard. So there was a lot of like trying to build up to this like traditional view of what a woman should be. And so I wonder, like behind closed doors, was it sort of something similar? Because it's like always trying to keep up with the Joneses type thing. But it wasn't as obvious to me because my story was different from an immigrant lens. Whereas theirs was from an Irish lens. And I think there are a lot of parallels between how I was raised, but it's just not as obvious. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's just, yeah, like, as in, if anyone is having a weird space of like, I'm not going to ever forgive my parents, that like, I never thought I'd get to this stage, but you can. And it does take work and it does take a lot of tears and like screaming into a pillow, but you get there eventually.
Yeah. And so therapy has obviously really helped you, and it would be something that you would recommend as a positive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think therapy is great. And it's like, it's also like, it's like that whole idea of like the way you think, the narrative that you have in your head is the narrative that is true. So if you're going to say someone's a bad person, then you believe they're a bad person. But if you reframe it being like, well, they were a bad person because X, Y, and Z, and it wasn't really their fault, they were put in a corner and that's why they did that, you have a lot more compassion and empathy towards that person.
Yeah, you take the intent out of it nearly. You're like, okay, they did me wrong in my opinion, but they didn't mean to hurt
exactly.
me. They didn't intend to hurt me.
Yeah, exactly. And I think once you reframe, and that's what therapy has really helped me with, is reframing the narratives and the stories that I tell myself in my own head. They're not necessarily true. So it's like, it's to be very careful with what your brain tells you, because sometimes it can be skewed by based on your own bias and your own perception. But yeah, that's everything. Thanks so much for having me on. I feel like it was.
Thank you for coming on. No, thank you for coming on and being so vulnerable and sharing that story.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, that's what I wanted to say. Can you remind everyone, please, where to find you on the internet, where to follow you, to subscribe?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, I'm at Serena Kajani, so SarinaKajani, the same on Twitter, and then the same on Patreon. And so it's www.patreon.com/SerenaKajani, where I do a load of fiber recipes, and I give you all the macronutrients and et cetera. But also some of the things that I do on Instagram is try to disseminate like scientific literature and jargon. So if you're confused by something specifically in like the obesity, diabetes, like nutritional space, and you're like, I don't understand why this is, why we should be doing this or X, Y, and Z, I can help you understand why we're taking out the scientific jargon so it's understandable for you, the general audience. So that's also what I do. And you can find it. You can just DM me and I'll try my best.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much, guys, for listening and watching if you chose to watch on YouTube. If you're on the audio platforms, please give us a review because it really helps us out in the old rankings. And I shall see you next week. Thanks again, Serena.
Thanks, Claire.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.